Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Ron Timmermans, 2021 National Flight Instructor of the Year, who was inducted into the National Association of Flight Instructors Hall of Fame in 2022. Ron is an independent master flight and ground instructor from Orlando, Florida. He is an airline transport pilot with over 7,000 hours of flight time and is today's host.
Hello, I'm Ron Timmermans, one of the many hosts for the Florida Aviation Network. And I want to welcome you today to our broadcast live and in the clear from the Sun and Fun campus at Lakeland, Florida. This is the 49th annual International Aviation Expo and Sun and Fun. Let's see, Sun and Fun, two words, sun and fun. So lots of sun today. It's going to be mid-80s, beautiful sunshiny sky, blue sky, a few puffy clouds. So that's the first part of it. And then the fun part, well, if you are coming to Sun and Fun today, you're going to have a lot of fun. But if you can't make it here in person, well, the next best thing is to watch us on Florida Aviation Network. So we're glad that you've joined us today. Hopefully you'll be able to make it to Sun and Fun later in the week or maybe next year, if not this year. So it's great to have you with us. So the Florida Aviation Network does interviews with various aviation personalities and companies and the like during the whole week of Sun and Fun. We're broadcasting from our temporary studio at the Central Florida Aviation Academy at the Sun and Fun campus. And today we have a very special guest, among others, Mr. Diego Alfonso. So, Diego, thank you for joining us today. So, this is Diego Alfonso Sr., because correct. I just met your son a bit ago, Diego yeah. Alfonso Jr., so there's two of you, right?
Yes, sir.
This is great. This is great. And, Diego, I must say that I'm kind of awestruck here, because I know many years ago you sat in this chair doing the interviews of people, and now here the roles are reversed, so I'm awed to be in your presence, and hopefully I'll do as good a job as you did and the like, but I'm so glad that you joined us today as our guest.
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, thank you for giving me this opportunity, and second, I want you to know that I'm honored to be interviewed by you. Maybe some people out there don't know that, but he is a CFI of the year 2021, if I'm correct.
Yes, sir.
So, for me, that's definitely an honor.
Thank you very much, Diego. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. So, Diego, you've got a rich and long background in aviation. So I'd like to just kind of set the stage so people know who you are and just how much experience you have, or at least a snippet of your experience. So you've been flying since the early 60s, did you tell me?
Yes. My first flight was in 1961. Of course, I didn't have the means to continue the flying. To get my license, that came a little bit later on, even after I got married. And so I can say that I've been actually flying, dedicated to flying for about 50 years.
About 50 years.
Yes. So during that time, I accumulated 26,000 hours of flight time. Out of those, 11,000 plus are flight instructing, which is really what I love to do. It's
indeed.
Just teach.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, I'm a flight instructor as well, and I can certainly understand your passion for that. It is probably one of the most fulfilling things that I've done in my life is teaching. As much as I like aviation, I like teaching it almost as well.
And so that's
great. So we have a similar passion. So I think you told me that when you started flying, it was really expensive.
Yes, actually, 1 hour dual in an Aronca Chief was $9.
$9. That included fuel and everything.
And
instructor.
Wet.
Yeah.
Yes.
My
and
goodness.
And it's an interesting story there that I'd like to share with you. It's real quick. This happened in Red Bank, New Jersey. The airport is no longer there. And the instructor said to me on the third hour, he says, I got a deal for you. And I said, okay, I'm listening. He says, I'm just going to charge you $5.
Wow.
And that's exactly what I did. And I said, sign me up. Well, the problem was that he was flying banners. So he was going to teach me while he was signing by.
I see.
So there you are, 3 hours, and uh-huh. you're in an airplane looking at the ground coming up and then grabbing that banner, and it seems like the airplane just steps in midair. And so I survived that, but I became the best pilot was flying straight on level and making 180-degree turns. Uh-huh. Because that was what we did in Asbury Park. We flew 20 miles that way, and 20 miles this
along
way.
Along the beach, I
and
imagine.
That was the extent of the instruction.
Yeah.
Instruction with no turn, I mean, no steep turns, no stalls, nothing like that. But anyway, it was cheap. But of course, I changed schools.
Yeah. So you, as you started flying, you started your commercial training then, huh?
Yes.
So something like that. Okay, so I think we got all the rest of the phones shut off now. So
we should be
silenced now. That's good. That's good. So 26,000 hours over 50 plus years of flying.
Yes.
I know you've worked for the FAA. You were an examiner for many, many years. And there's no telling how many pilots that you've touched with your knowledge and your experience and helped coach them.
Well,
Tell us a little bit more about your background.
I was an examiner for 26 years. I conducted approximately 6,000 check rides. I'm not going to tell you I've seen everything, but I've seen almost everything.
Uh-huh.
And it was very rewarding for me, especially for those that came really well prepared and aced the thing. Someone asked me one day, he says, how many pilot applicants have you failed? And I said, I never fail anybody. I never pass anybody either. They do that.
Yeah.
My job is only to evaluate that they meet the FAA standards. They
exactly.
do. They get their certificate extended.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually the core of the job.
Uh-huh.
And I was, and it's very rewarding every time you write a certificate.
I can imagine, because you're giving that pilot now a ticket to continue learning.
Exactly.
As well as showing you that he or she could do all the maneuvers that were necessary.
Exactly.
From your evaluation. Well, that's great. So I'm sure you've accumulated just an immense amount of knowledge about aviation and about flying and the like. And so someone would say, you know, Diego, you should write a book. Have you ever thought about that?
Yes. Well, actually, someone did.
Oh, did they?
I used to do, you know, I've been coming to Sun and Fun for 30 years. This is my 30th year. And I've been always doing seminars. And there was a gentleman by the name of Jose Rodriguez that he was working with the Wings program at the time and then with the FAST team. And every time I finished a presentation, he was a young kid, not a pilot, but an aviation enthusiast. And every time I finished my presentation and I walked by him and he'd go, you have to write a book.
You have to write a book.
He said that so many times, and I think that's the spark, and I actually mention it in the book, the spark of writing, of the possibility that I will contemplate in writing a book.
Uh-huh.
Now, the reason why I wrote the book is different, but that was what got me going on really trying to write a book.
So you now have written a book?
Correct.
Oh, would that be what I have here in front of me?
Yes, sir.
The Theory of Flight 2.0 by Diego Alfonso Sr.
Yes.
So this is your new book, just recently published?
About a month and a half ago.
Month and a half ago.
Yes,
good.
So it's due in the market. And it could be obtained in Amazon. Just type in the title and it'll take you right into the book.
Very good. Very good. So that's great. So pilots, whether they're brand new pilots or experienced pilots, they can learn a lot, I'm sure, from your Theory of Flight 2.0.
Yes, but here's the thing, and I want to make a disclaimer, I guess. I don't want anyone to believe what I say. Nobody. I want everybody to look at what I say, analyze what I say, and then determine whether, because this book, it is kind of controversial. Because it brings something new. And someone said, you mean you're going to bow-mouth the FAA? I said, absolutely not. I said, the FAA, the books that the FAA has written come from scientists. They come from over there. And they said, you know, this is what pilots need to know. Then the FAA evaluates it, writes it, and puts them out. So what I found out was a few things that really didn't jibe. And they contradict the status quo. But in no way, shape, or form, I want this to be considered a criticism to anybody, to any institution, to any school, any flight instructor. No. This is something that is what I found out, and I think that I'm on the right path, and time will tell whether that is right or not.
Indeed. So. I guess we'll tell by sales, huh?
Exactly.
And feedback that you get. So the FAA has a theory in many of their handbooks, and this is a splash of practicality, I imagine.
Exactly.
Good.
Exactly.
Good. Practical things that we can use.
Yes.
Good. I like your theory of challenging some things and being challenged by others as well.
Of course.
I have a similar philosophy when I'm teaching a new client how to transition to a Bonanza or Baron. That's what I do. And so I tell the client, I'm going to show you a way to do a particular maneuver safely, whether it's a landing or a slow flight or stall or whatever. And I know this will work safely. And if you want to adopt that habit, that's great. But if you hear of another way of doing it from another client or another instructor, you should evaluate that as well and the way I showed you and then determine how you want to do it and the like. And so I don't think any one of us have the market on all the right answers. So it's good that you're willing to be challenged as well as to put forth some new ideas. I like that. I like that approach.
Well, just to corroborate what you're saying, the thing that really gave me the motivation to write the book was two quotes that I put them in the book. And I'm going to read you the quote.
Good.
The first quote says, if we work on the assumption that what is accepted as true is really true, then there will be little hope for advance. You know who said that?
Who said that?
Orville Wright.
Orville. I've heard of him.
Yes. So when I read that and I said, oh, wow, man.
Yeah. Way back then.
You're right. So I said, I think I'm on the right track. And then I read another quote. Second quote that read, I am an enthusiast, but not a crank, in the sense that I have some pet theories as to the proper construction of a flying machine. I wish to avail myself of all that is already known, and then, if possible, add my might to help the future worker who will attain final success. And Wilbur said that.
Wilbur, his brother. Yes.
So when I read this, I said, I wish I wrote that, because that's my goal. That is exactly my goal. So without sinning on the side of plagiarism, I change eight words in that quote to explain exactly what my goal is. And he says, I am an enthusiast but not a crank, in the sense that I have some theories as to the proper ways of flight instruction. I wish to avail myself of all that is already known and then, if possible, add my might to help the future pilot, student, and CFI to attain final success. So I took that quote and just changed those eight words because that's the motivation behind this book.
Good.
And I feel that, to me, it made a lot of sense to make it part of the book. So,
yeah, well, good. So that's a great goal, I think, to help others, obviously, and to challenge them, and that's always good, beneficial to help someone else. So just tell us a little bit more about what the book is about. The Theory of Flight is kind of a broad title, of
yes.
course, and so I imagine you get into some specific things. Can
right.
you give us
and now I got to give you another disclaimer. Because
are you an attorney? Or
no,
yeah,
no,
just,
no.
Okay,
no,
I just
no,
want to make
but
sure.
To make people accept the reading the book, not what's in the book, but to say, maybe I want to read that. And the thing is this, I like to use the dark room analogy.
Dark room.
That means that if we're in a dark room for an extended period of time, 3 hours, 4 hours, and then all of a sudden someone flicks the lights on, what is the initial reaction of humans? Is to go like this.
Yeah.
Close your eyes.
Yeah.
Well, the mind works the same way. If we live a long time with certain firm beliefs and concepts, and then someone comes along and says, wait a minute, no, let's look at this. The mind does exactly the same thing. It shuts down. So that's what I don't want people to do.
You don't want them to do.
Right. What I want them to do is what I call to put on the scientist hat. And why do I call that the scientist hat? Because the job of a scientist is to make sure that the current theory remains correct. And the only way they can do that is when another person comes in with a different theory for that theory, the scientist don't say, nah, that's not it. The science says, I think this guy is a quack. But I want to analyze what he says. And maybe he's right. You see what
I do.
And that's the way I want people to see this. That's why I say, don't believe anything I say. Because what I call also the scientist cliche is that what was right yesterday may be questionable today and even wrong tomorrow. Remember Pluto?
Yes.
Copernicus? Galileo? No, that doesn't go like that. This goes like this.
Yeah.
And one was put in jail for that.
Yes, indeed.
So I told my wife, I said, I'm either going to be inducted into the Aviation Hall of Fame or the Witness Protection Program. But I'm going to be inducted somewhere anyway. So that's a disclaimer I want to show, that the person comes to read this book like there's something new, but with an open mind.
That's great.
And if at the end the person says, this, I wasted $20. That's okay.
I don't think anybody's going to say that.
But that's the feeling that I want to create in everyone that is listening when they read the book.
Yeah, indeed. So if you purchase this book, authored by Diego, you've got an open opportunity to question him or to challenge him, and so he welcomes that. And so
yes, as a matter of fact, my email is in the book,
is in the book.
What I ask people.
Good.
To challenge. Tell me if there's something that they don't understand or what have you. Or maybe an aeronautical engineer or aerodynamicist. I have trouble with that kind of word. But that they can say, yeah, let's take a look at this. That's all I want.
Well, that's good. That's good. And I'm sure you'll get some feedback from some interested people. And
sure.
It'll probably help a lot of other people understand things better. So give us a synopsis of what do you have in one or two of the chapters or the various parts in the book.
Okay.
Give us a sample so that our appetite is whetted.
First, let me tell you why what I call the root of the book. The root of the book, you probably realize already. I know it's very light, probably you don't even know, but I speak with a little bit of an accent. You know what I'm saying?
I hadn't noticed.
See? You haven't even noticed it. But no, the reason why I always clarify this is because people hear me talk and they think that I was born in Massachusetts somewhere, you know. And so I want to make sure I'm a Cuban by birth and American by choice. And, of course, Merriam-Webster and myself, we develop a very close relationship. Dictionary-wise.
I know.
Because I live with a dictionary. I became addicted to looking at definitions. And it's with me still. That's what I do 60-some years later. And then the thing that really never, no one could explain to me is why, if Bernoulli was the father of lift, why was I flying in a 150 aerobot inverted? So now Bernoulli is down here, and here's the flat side, and I'm still flying. So no one could specifically and convincingly explain that to me. And the other thing that happened to me, I used to fly the traffic, report the traffic in Jersey, between Jersey and New York, Route 46, Washington Bridge, Verrazano Bridge, West Hudson Parkway. And that was 2.5 hours a day in the morning, 2.5 hours in the afternoon. And in the wintertime, the winds get very stiff. And we flew every day. And I was flying at 150. And one day, coming back, I was going to a little airport called Trinkhouse, Grassfield, in Jersey. And I realized, one of the things that I believe in is what I call the personal proficiency plan. I really feel that a pilot, every time they're going to fly, they should train themselves, keep the training up, do a short field takeoff. Next time, do a soft field takeoff. If you're going to VFR on a cross country 200 miles, do some slow flight. Make some steep turns while you're going over there so you don't have to wait 2 years to go for the flight review.
Yeah.
So I practiced that too. So that day I decided I was going to do a short field approach into Trinca. And then I realized that I was indicating 45 miles an hour, and that airplane was miles. And I was drifting backwards. The houses were going that way. And that was shocking to me that I had to go more than 75% power to get to the runway.
Wow.
Of course, when I landed, the student came out. I said, today is not a flying day. We're going to do some ground. We did that. He left. And I stayed, and I did probably 15, 20 takeoffs and landings there. And I really started to enjoy the wind and to understand the wind. But no one could explain to me why was I drifting back.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to experience that, don't you, indeed?
Right. So I decided to find out.
Yeah.
And that's when I went into the rabbit hole, and I started to realize a lot of things that really didn't jive.
Yeah.
One of them in particular is what I call, I'm coining it the Alfonso's Principle.
Alfonso's Principle.
Alfonso's Principle.
Okay.
And it reads like this. An air molecule is always stationary relative to a flying object, whether that object is free-falling, floating, self-propelled, thrown, towed, or fired. The air molecules are always, regardless of the speed of the object and direction, and regardless of the speed of the wind and its direction. The air molecules on an airplane, the air molecules are always stationary relative to the airplane. Not the airplane, but the air molecules.
Good point.
So that derives the fact that the wind can never strike an airplane, and the airplane can never strike the wind. That's what I discovered.
That's great. Diego, do you remember when you were in this seat doing the interview and hosting someone like yourself, and you got to the point where you got near the end of the thing and you had to try to wind it up? That's where I'm at right at the moment.
Okay.
We pretty much ran out of time. And
okay.
So I'm so pleased to have had an opportunity to interview you and talk to you and to have you feature your book. And so I imagine you will have much success about this and probably a lot of good feedback from...
If I can say one more thing.
You can.
It's going to be unveiled tomorrow at the Florida Air Museum at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock.
So if you have a chance to make it, please... go over there, and I'll be more happy than talk to you.
And when do they go on sale?
They're on sale already.
They're on sale already at Amazon.
At Amazon.
Amazon.com. The Theory of Flight 2.0 by Diego Alfonso Sr. And so it'll be a great book. I'm looking forward to getting a copy and reading it myself, and I'll probably comment to you on the email.
Oh, yes.
Maybe not necessarily challenge.
I got thick skin.
Yeah, okay, good.
I don't want
good.
The good things, I want the bad things.
Okay, well, you'll get both, I'm sure, and a lot of compliments as well. So thank you for joining us for this interview today with Diego Alfonso. He's a fabulous person, and I wish we'd had more time to speak to him because he's got a wealth of experience. But our time is limited here, and so we have to get on to the next interview, which will be happening in just a few moments. I'm Ron Timmermans with the Florida Aviation Network. Thank you so much for joining us. Please stay tuned and come back for the next interview.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.